Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. I'm Dirk, I'm your host, and this week we have an interview with Nathan Olson from the Minnesota DNR Fishery Department speaking about a fall update on the fishery in the area and what has happened this summer. Stay tuned for that, and before we dive into the events and the interview, here's some news. Two sad news. We have our pheasant numbers down 26% in Minnesota. According to the Minnesota DNR, based on an August roadside count, pheasants population in Minnesota is down 26% from last year, 32% below 10-year average, and 62% below the long-term average. And they say it's according to a loss in CIP land, which causes a decline in population due to the decline in undisturbed nesting cover. And Minnesota has lost approximately 686,800 acres of CIP land since 2007. That's significant. Maybe some people want to enroll their land in CIP so we can get our pheasant numbers up again. That would be great. Another sad news is Elmer's Texas Barbecue near Ottertail Lake burned down. Thank God there were nobody hurt. A little destination gone, and we hope that they will be able to rebuild it so that we have back Elmer's Texas Barbecue by next year. Some events this week. We have Cruise DL Night, September 13, 4 p.m. through 8:30 p.m. at the Detroit Lakes City Beach. We have Maplewood Sugar Shack Open House, also on September 14th, 3 p.m. The Sugar Shack at Maplewood State Park is having their grand opening September 14th with a ribbon cutting, tours, and demonstrations of maple syrup making and the equipment following. Third annual Lakes Trail Run, September 16th, 8 a.m. through 10 a.m. at the Detroit Mountain Recreation Area. The Lake Trail Run is at the Detroit Mountain Recreation Area and is at 5K or 10K race, 8 a.m. walk-up registrations, 9 a.m. race starts. Leather and Leaves Motorcycle Ride, September 16th, 10 a.m. through 6 p.m. Annual Leather and Leaves Motorcycle Ride around the lakes will take you to three different locations and ends back at the DLCCC, it's the Detroit Lakes Community Center. Registration is at 10 a.m. with the ride starting at noon. There will be door prizes given away at the end. Must be present to win. Register online at www.dlccc.org. More information and a link on our website as well. Wildflower Golf Course Club Champion on September 16th, 3 p.m. through September 17th, 10 a.m. Wildflower Course members compete to become the 2017 Club Champion. Well, good luck. Live music at Richwood Winery, Zorbis, and Disgruntled Brewery, wildlife movies, and more events online at lakelifeweekend.com. And I don't want to keep you away from our interview with Nathan Olson. Thank you again for tuning in. Feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com with any ideas or critique. We look forward to having you next week. Have a great weekend. Hello, I'm sitting here with Nathan Olson from the DNR, and he was with us this spring talking about fishing and summer programs. And yeah, welcome back, Nathan.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dirk. I thought I would try to get back here and we talk a little bit about what we've been up to this past, 3 months or so this past summer. And hopefully we'll cover a little bit of what we're going to be doing the next few months. And one of the biggest questions that we get is, what do we do during the winter? And so hopefully we can talk a little bit about that too.
Yeah,
so,
what does the DNR
hibernating? Yeah. Well, it'd be nice if we could. But no, for the past few summer or the past few months here, this summer, one of the biggest things that we do is basically routine lake surveys. So I have a crew of four people, and sometimes they're out on two lakes a week. Doing just netting of lakes to see what the fish populations are like. And so this summer we got to 20 of those lake surveys. So we hit We had 20 different lakes this summer just getting out there and doing just routine lake surveys.
And refresh our memory, you are covering Becker County?
Yeah, we have Becker, Manoman, Polk, Red Lake, Clay, and Norman counties.
And there was a couple lakes in each county?
Yeah, most of our lakes are in Becker and Manoman, but okay. We did have a few up in Polk County too as well, so near Grand Forks.
And oh yeah, and the summer season, like you averaged 20 lake surveys?
Yeah, last summer it was about 16, so it just really depends on which, you know, what summer and how the schedule plays out.
So you have been really busy.
We have been really busy, and again, these lake surveys are basically, we're just trying to get an idea of what are the fish populations doing in these lakes. Do we need to make any adjustments to regulations or our stocking efforts in those lakes?
Oh, and your data is fed to the DNR headquarters from all over the state, and Yep. Then the big programs begin to be created.
Yep, and then they use all that information just to do statewide evaluations if they want to. It goes into a large database. It's probably the bread and butter, I guess you could say, of our fisheries program is, even though we are the land of 10,000 lakes, Yeah. We do try to get to as many lakes as we can just to keep up to date on how those fish populations are doing.
So what did we find out? Interesting.
Well, there's all sorts of opportunities for people out there. Depending on what you want to catch, we have it for you. If you want to go for trout, you know, we're up on Bad Medicine this summer doing a survey. That's one of our major trout lakes. If you want to catch muskies, we are on Many Point this spring looking at the abundance of muskies in Many Point Lake. But if you're just a panfish fisherman, we've got some great panfish lakes too. So that's probably the neatest thing about my work area is just the diversity of fisheries that we have available for people.
And can you share some findings?
We have, yeah. I mean, if there's lake associations out there,
no, right now.
Yeah, oh, yeah, like, I didn't bring them with me. Okay. But
are they accessible? The reports already?
Yes. Yeah, okay. We have the basic outputs of how many fish we caught per net. Otherwise, Lake Finder, which is on our website, is Yeah. Probably the go-to spot for most people, just with the most data in it. And those reports will be up in there hopefully before the next fishing opener. But if they want preliminary reports, they can come talk to us. We were up on White Earth, so if people are looking for walleyes, we had a very large walleye count on White Earth Lake. We also had a high number of walleyes on Vanos Lake, which is a very small water body in a wildlife management area. But those fish still have a little bit to grow yet. They're only about 12 inches long. So usually people are looking at about a 14-inch fish if they're going to start keeping any. So hopefully in a year or two, those fish will be available for anglers to start taking them home.
Which lake was that?
That's a Little Vanos. That's up in Polk County.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's about an hour and a half north of here, so it's a little bit of a track if people are going to go. But it happened to winter kill a few years ago. We put in some walleye fry. They took off, and we had a large amount of walleyes in our survey for that lake.
Any other peak or something that you remember?
You're putting me on the spot here, Derek.
Sorry.
You know,
I'm like that.
I don't know, if you talk to our staff, they see so many lakes that it just kind of runs together.
One thing I read just, I think yesterday or today, that a muskie attacked three women. What was that?
Well, it's supposedly up on Island Lake. It's up near Duluth.
By Duluth.
Yep. So it's not in our area, but...
Yeah. Is that true, obviously? Or?
It's hard to say for sure whether it was a muskie or not. We weren't there. The first report was even more ambiguous on exactly what happened. This last report, it does seem like there was at least a fish involved. We don't know if it was a muskie or a northern pike. You know, they both look very similar.
Sure.
But one thing I want people to just think about is, like, you know, Lake Detroit. I mean, look how many people we have on the city beach on a normal weekend, and we have a very robust population of muskie in Lake Detroit, and we haven't seen any of these major attacks there. And so if they do happen, it's really few and far between, and it's not the norm.
And they claimed that there was an anklet involved, something shiny.
Yeah, it sounded like there was a lot of factors going against the girl that was there. There was fish on a stringer. There was, you know, a bracelet on her ankle. And so, I mean, there's just a number of things that that could have played into why the fish was in the area.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, fish do bite. And we've had that. And probably the worst bites I've ever had are just from bluegills, you know.
Really?
Very common. So don't, I mean... I hope people don't freak out or get, you know, decide they're not going to be out recreating just because a muskie might be in the water.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I agree. So we netted 20 lakes. and we surveyed. How much staff was out there?
Well, I have four full-time staff that are in the field working, and then we did hire three interns this summer to help get a lot of that work done. So when we're at the peak of our staffing, we're almost at seven people out there. Sometimes we have three people in a boat doing the work. A lot of times it's just two people out there running the nets for us. So basically it takes about a week per lake, you know. So it's you know, if people have seen us out there, they know it's us because we've got a big table and a boat and a very specific looking boat, and it's not just your normal fishing boat out there. So we're pretty obvious to people if we're out in the lakes.
What else happened this summer?
Well, we also did some special sampling. One thing that is going on is some zooplankton sampling on Detroit Lake and Big Cormorant. Both lakes have zebra mussels now, and so we're monitoring the zooplankton population.
What is zooplankton?
Zooplankton are like the tiny microscopic animals in a lake. And so they're the primary, like the base of the food chain for a lot of small fish. And so if we're seeing issues with our walleyes or other game fish, and we're seeing a complete decline in our zooplankton abundance, then we might be able to make the connection that zebra mussels might have some role to play in altering fish communities. So it's going to take us a long time to monitor that. We just started last year, so this is our second year of taking the samples. And basically we're just looking at how abundant are the zooplankton in the lake as zebra mussels continue to increase in abundance in those water bodies. And then do the species change, you know, are only certain species of zooplankton being affected by zebra mussels. So there's a couple things we're looking at, and again, it'll be a few years before we can actually start to see any changes, if any. So that's just one of those proactive things we're trying to do, just to see what goes on once an invasive species gets in a lake.
Sure. So two big projects already?
Oh yeah. And then we do another thing called IBI surveys. It's called Index of Biotic Integrity. And the easiest way I can explain that is every lake should have what we feel a base species, a number of species. So if we go to a lake and we do a survey and we're not finding those fish species there,
a variety of species,
uh-huh. Then we start to wonder, you know, what is going on? Is there some issue with the lake that should be addressed? And so we do these surveys and compare it to other lakes and see whether it's meeting a threshold or if it's not meeting a threshold. And if it's not meeting a threshold level, for their score, then that's when we can start looking deeper to see if there's some impairment or some problem within the watershed or within the lake itself that's causing the fish species not to be there. So it's a higher level type survey, you know. It's way easier for people to grasp the regular fish survey because it's all about how many fish did you catch per net and how many bluegills are there or walleyes, you know. But when you start getting down to like some of the smaller minnow species and things that people don't see every day, it's a little bit harder to explain that to them. But it is all tied to clean water and trying to make sure that our water bodies maintain as diverse and as clean as they can. And so with the end point being, if you're not seeing those fish, there's money available to try to
restock.
Yeah, or just
establish them.
Yeah, or just fix the problems that might be going on in the water body. So, that's the interns that we hire. That's a lot of their work is going out and helping with those IBI surveys too. So, you know, it's mostly just being in the field as much as we can. You know, it's only about 3 to 4 months that we can, you know, during the summer when it's the peak of the season that we can try to catch these fish. So we really have to be out there almost daily, you know, just to try to get the work done.
Yeah.
And then that doesn't even end, you know, coming this fall, you know. So we start rolling into the fall. And, you know, we talked a little bit about walleye stocking. And we are now, you know, we're kind of done with our survey evaluation stuff. And now we have to get to our walleye ponds where we've actually put walleye fry in from the spring.
Yeah, I remember. So how did that go? Did we have a good harvest?
Yeah, we did really great this year taking eggs.
That was April.
Yep. That was April.
No difficulties raising them?
We had a great hatch rate. Actually, we had more fry than we expected to have. And so we were able to stock some other water bodies and try some other ponds. And basically, just to remind the listeners, you know, the walleye ponds are basically wetlands that we put these walleye fry into. And we hope that they naturally just grow to about 5 or 6 inches, which we hope they should be
in
now.
In 6 months?
Less than that. Almost four months, And so if they have minnows available, they'll get even bigger if they can get on top of those and start eating them. And so we have about 25 ponds that we have to get to now in the next month and a half to see if there's any survival of those walleyes. And we also have to disease test a lot of those fish too.
Oh.
And so now we've kind of switched
gears.
You
hatch them? Net them?
Or yep, you we net them out, and then we have to send a certain number to our pathology lab down in St. Paul. And we're looking for a disease called viral hemorrhagic septicemia, VHS. You know, not the cassette that people are thinking about. It's just a disease that's been found in Wisconsin and in Lake Superior. And it's something that we just keep monitoring.
What is it?
It's a virus.
Virus.
Yep. So
in the blood system?
And it can be passed on from one fish to the next and stuff. So there's a wide range of species that can be affected. So we're really hoping not to see this. We've been testing for many years, and we've only had some hits in Lake Superior, you know, which is part of the Great Lakes system. We haven't seen anything in any inland lakes yet. So,
good.
But we keep testing anyway just to make sure. So we have to get those wallies tested, and we try to get the results back so that before we start moving the fish.
I was going to say, they freeze those ponds and they would be dead.
We would love if they froze every year so we could start fresh, clean slate. Because any fish species that are in the pond usually interact with the walleye. So even minnows, you know, imagine you put this tiny walleye fry, which is about the size of a mosquito, into a pond. And it's full of minnows. It's hard for those fry to live because there's all those little minnow mouths that are looking to eat them, you know. The cleaner the pond is, the better for us. And unfortunately, we're just not getting the winters like we've had in the past, you know. So we're not getting the winter kill that we've seen. And so sometimes we've been struggling to get the fish that we need. And we're looking to get about 10,000 pounds of fingerlings in the next month and a half.
Five ton.
Yeah, you know, to stock over 20 lakes that we have to try to get to stock for walleye fingerlings. And all that is based off of lake management plans that we write and past stocking efforts. You know, we always try to put walleye fry in first to see if they do well, because they're really easy. You know, you hatch the fish, or you hatch the eggs, and the walleye fry are there. They're a much cheaper option for stocking than the walleye fingerling.
Sure,
you know,
because a lot more work involved.
So
netting now, testing, netting.
Yep, testing, and then we wait for the water temps to cool. At least to get into the lower 60s or so before we really start moving a lot of fish. You know, because the higher water temp, the harder it is on the fish to transport them from the pond to the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And so October is really the peak month for really stocking walleye fingerlings and moving fish around to those different lakes. So my staff will be busy with that here, all the way up until ice up, really.
Okay.
And then besides that, we have, some other evaluation stuff. We do go out onto a few lakes and do what we call walleye electrofishing. And that is just like it sounds. It's a boat, that you apply electrical current to the water. It shocks the fish, and then we can net them and measure them and count them and stuff.
But
and
they're not dead.
They're not dead.
They're
nope.
just, shocked.
They're just stunned. Yep.
Stunned. Yeah.
And so what we're looking for is, we want to know, did on some of the lakes, did the fry that we put in that lake, did they survive? Because they should also be about 4 to 5 inches now in these lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's a lake that we don't stock, you know, like Island in Becker County, White Earth, and Big Cormorant are all naturally reproducing walleye populations. And so we go back in to see how they did. Did they have a good year class of walleyes? And all that just factors into to tracking the walleye population and make sure that it's healthy.
Yeah.
You know, so we have about 5 or 6 lakes that we do that. It's all nighttime work. And so we got to try to fit it in when the weather's nice and when we have time and all that stuff. So, you know, we're even though we're out of the summer months, we're still very busy into the fall.
Yeah, it sounds like it. it would. Yeah, of course you're busy.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, they'll still people will probably still see plenty of our trucks driving around and doing fish work. And it all helps, all the data goes into just managing the lakes and making sure that things are going the way they should.
Yeah. And then fall is, you said this is done with freeze up. That's like November.
Yeah. So, you know, we're always, sometimes we're pushing it down to the last minute, you know, watching the weather. We have had some ponds that we've even let freeze over, and then we know it's going to get warmer again and let the ice come off the pond, and then we get back in and do some more netting and things like that. But most of the time, once we start to see that the ponds start to freeze and stuff, then we start getting our nets out, because that would be the worst, is if our nets get frozen into the lake or the pond or whatever.
Sure.
And so we don't want that. And most of the time we are wrapping up all the work by then, but you never know. It could be, you know, the Farmer's Almanac I've heard is calling for a very rough winter, so who knows. We'll see if it's true or not, but we're always going up against that clock of water temps and cooler weather.
And what's your program in the winter?
Yeah, so the program in the winter is basically taking a breather. You know, we do have some staff that then can use some of their vacation time. But it's really all about taking all the information that we gathered and putting it into report form. You know, all of the, basically when they're out doing the netting on those lakes, they gather the data, they come back, they download it into the computer, they make a quick report, and then they don't look at that again until this winter. And so it's going back into those, into that data, aging the fish, because we pull structures off of all the fish that we have just to see how old they are and how fast they're growing, because that factors into how to manage those fish populations.
How do you measure the age?
So on some of them we use scales. So you just take a scale and it's like rings on a tree.
Oh, really?
The best way that we've seen is there's a bone in the head. So if you're, if the fish is dead and you, you know, can kill it basically, then you can remove the bone out of the head, and that's the best, most accurate method. It's called an otolith.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's probably the best way if you really want to get an accurate measurement of how old the fish is, because a lot of times with scales, as they get older, the rings start to get put on so close together at near the end of the scale that it just looks like a big black line.
Sure.
You know, so you may see five, but it could be like a 10-year-old fish, and it's just five more of those rings right on the edge.
Oh, what was the oldest fish you ever found?
Well, last year, we had a largemouth bass that was 16 years old.
Really?
Yep. And it wasn't it wasn't even that large. You know, it was like 17 inches. And so...
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a... And, you know, just for people's knowledge, like bluegills, you know, the really nice-sized bluegills that are 8 to 9 inches, those are almost 10 years old a lot of times. So, you know, when people think, you know, it's just a bluegill, you know, it takes 8 to 10 years to replace a decent-sized bluegill. So... That's why I always try to tell people to be very conscientious about which species or what size of fish they keep and how many they keep, because you can basically curtail a population or cause it to decline just by over-harvest of fish.
Because the older are better for breeding?
Yep, yep. And for sure, in the case of panfish, bluegills, you know, we definitely want those older individuals. There's been research that has shown as you take out the older individuals, then smaller ones start to mature faster, and then your population starts to become dominated by smaller fish.
Other species?
Well, for bluegills, for sure.
Okay, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And of course, you know, for like if you're talking about a walleye or something, the bigger fish usually have more eggs. And so trying to protect those bigger fish can also do a lot for a fish population.
Yeah, interesting. That's really interesting. Okay, yeah. Because I had no clue.
So, you know, we talked about 20 lake surveys that we were at. So that means 20 different reports have to be written this summer or this winter, you know, and all those fish have to be aged for 20 different lakes. And then on top of that, we have lake management plans from lakes last year that we surveyed and have reports for. So now basically we write a report one year. The next year we look at its management plan. Where are we going to go now that we know what the recent survey history has told us?
And so now you plan for the next season?
And then, plan for the next 5 years almost on that lake. Are you going to continue to stock what you're stocking? Does it need a regulation? Are there any other social considerations that we should know about on this lake, or things that have changed that should cause us concern? And so that all goes into the lake management plan and basically guides our future efforts on that lake for the next 5 to 7 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
So some of those plans, it's basically, hey, the population looks the same as it did 5 years ago. It's going to be kind of on cruise control. Other lakes, it's more of like, you know, we've been putting in more walleyes here for the last 5 years, and it hasn't done anything to the gill net catch punit effort. We haven't caught any more walleyes, you know, based even though we're stocking more fish. And so...
What would that mean then?
That would mean that we would look at reducing the stocking, because obviously fish we put in, it's not giving us any returns, you know. And so just to make sure that we're doing the most with the money that the anglers are giving us, it's, you know, we can take that money and put it elsewhere and try some other things.
The money the English giving us?
Yeah, I mean, all of our budget really is driven by user fees.
Yes.
So when people buy a fishing license, it goes into the Game and Fish Fund, and then that's allocated back out to us. There is a match to it from the federal government. But for the most part, you know, we get very little funding just from the general fund. It's pretty much all hunting and license... hunting and fishing license dollars that drive our programs, you know. So... You know, if someone, I would hope that anyone that hunts or fishes would agree with us that when we do an evaluation and we're not seeing any return, that we look at putting that money in some other program.
Sure. Yeah. Good question. Yeah. Of course. You
know, so, So a lot of time that's probably the biggest change that we see with lake management plans is the current fish stocking working that we're doing for walleye. Most of the time it's just walleyes. We do some trout stocking in some lakes, but walleyes are the biggest thing that we are really monitoring and keeping track of.
Question, has there been an increased decline in licensing sales? Did we know fishing licenses steady?
We are, you know, if you look across the whole United States, there is sort of this trend of decline for, really? But in Minnesota, it's been holding fairly steady, you know, and I think it's because we've got a lot of opportunities for people to hunt or fish, you know, wherever they want to go. And we want to keep that the same, you know, so we've been bucking the trend, you know, we haven't seen, it's kind of been a flat line. But even though we still see the same amount of licenses being sold, inflation always catches up to that, whatever the license fee is. And so that is one change that's going to come up here in March of 2018, is that licenses will go up.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yep. So for a resident fishing license, it's $3 more, you know, for the whole year. So it's not, we're not talking a major increase in fees, but it's going to help us stay in the black, you know, for the next 5 years.
Okay.
So, and that's really just holding us at basic levels where we're at now. We are down a staff person in Detroit Lakes. We have no plans of filling that position.
No ability?
No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the money just isn't there.
Yeah.
You know, and so we are going to go through some strategic planning efforts in the DNR to see about, you know, what are going to be our priorities in the future, you know. Can we continue to do as many surveys or as much stocking as we have been doing based off of the current fiscal responsibilities that we have, you know? So there is going to be some work at the higher level, and I'm not involved in that. Mm-hmm. That's much, much above me. Mm-hmm. But just to see about, are there things that we can do now or start planning on doing now to help us financially in the future?
Mm-hmm. Another thing that popped up to my mind is there a violation? Like, do you have sheriff or DNR officers check licenses? Is there a lot of people without a license?
Well, I think their biggest infractions that they're probably seeing are, you know, like too many lines or, you know, one or two fish over the limit, or basic boating violations, like they don't have the right fire extinguisher or life jacket or something in their boat. But you know, we do have officers that are stationed. Usually they have a very large area for one person, you know. So if you haven't seen a conservation officer, it's because they're probably somewhere else in their work area, you know, trying to do something. But so there are officers out there. You know, I don't know if there's that many people that don't have a license. There's always a chance that someone tries to skate away with, you know, I'm only going fishing for one day, you know, I'll just take the chance. And that seems to be when the officer pulls up, but
hopefully,
yeah. But I think people try to do the right thing,
and
most of the time it's other issues that are happening out there that the officer has to deal with.
Yeah. Okay. No. Well. Yeah. I believe truly the real fishermen in our area, they respect the responsibility like the DNR has and does, like you, all the work you do is for the fishermen.
Yeah.
Or fisherwoman or whatever, and yep. And so I think a license is not an issue.
Well, and that's what we try to stress too, is if you look at the cost, you know, so even with the fee increase that'll happen in March, you're going to be, for you as a resident to fish all year, it's $25.
Yeah.
You know, imagine, I mean, if I take my son and my wife to a movie, it's like 40 to 50 bucks, you know, just after tickets. For a couple hours, you know, so... I hope that people realize that it's a great investment and activity that you can do all year round, you know. So
yeah.
So we try to do the best that we can to make sure that we're not wasting those dollars.
Yeah. Actually, everybody should just buy a license. How would that be, you know?
That would be great. Even if I know when I have family that come in, I'm like, just get the, you know, cuz they might, well, it might be back, and it's just like, just get the annual license. I mean, you know, to buy a couple day license, it's, you know, it's much, you might as well just buy the whole year, because it's not that much more to buy the whole year.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just the nature of the beast, you know. It's the same thing that any business deals with, is that inflation catches up and you have to start adjusting prices because, you know, the dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. So that's what we always have to deal with too.
What else is happening in your office? You have you're not just the fishing in your you also have, do you have something to share?
Yeah, we have obviously it's fall, so hunting seasons are coming up, and we do have a wildlife staff in our office, as well as forestry staff and some ecological and water resources staff. But I think the hunting season is probably the biggest thing that are on people's minds, and just some highlights. You know, they're saying that the rough grouse population is higher this year than it has been in past years. So people that like to go to Tamarack or kind of a little bit more northeast of Becker County here, they might see some good numbers of birds. Just be aware, there's, you know, make sure you're taking your prevention on ticks. That's one thing that keeps me out of the field a little bit, is just the deer ticks and things out there. But there are, you know, and the reason why I say that is because we've been trying to make a big push in the DNR to try to prevent tick bites and things like that.
How do you do that? I mean, seriously.
My pants are, they're impregnated with permethrin. And so it's sort of like DEET almost, you know, for like bug spray. But the foresters say they love it. If they have permethrin clothing, they really have no issues with ticks whatsoever. It repels the ticks from attaching. And so we.
How bad is it on your skin, though? You know, I heard DEET is really bad.
They do have a material safety data sheet on it. But I think if you compare, you know, the potential exposure, I don't think it's as bad as DEET. And if you're only going to be hunting in it, you're only going to have it on for a few hours. You know, you're probably going to want to wash some of that clothes separate than the other clothes that you have, just to kind of keep it, you know, all of your hunting gear in one spot, especially if you have it treated.
But the consumer can buy that product?
You can buy any clothing and send it to a company, and they'll
impregnate it.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. And there are already products on, you know, on the market that already have the DEET or the permethrin in it, you know. But you know, if you compare that to the issues I've seen with people that have had Lyme's disease, I would much rather almost take my chances with permethrin.
But have you recently
We have a forester in our office that has a basically a pacemaker because of Lyme disease.
Really?
And he's younger than me, so he's only 30 some years old. I had a spring laborer that was going to work for me in the hatchery this year, and he lives up by Bad Medicine Lake, and got Lyme disease and basically had to use a walker until he got antibiotics. And so it's a very serious issue.
I know it is, but I really didn't see it that
present. It's probably the number one, I know it's the number one safety issue in the DNR. You know, obviously we're out in the woods and all over the place anyway, but for the normal hunter, I think they're going to at least want to either, you know, try to tape their legs or their bootleg shut, or use some sort of bug spray, light-colored clothing so you can see the ticks and remove them. Make sure your dogs have some sort of protection, you know, front line or something like that.
Takes this spring.
They'll persist until there's snow cover. So just be aware. I don't want to freak people out, it's just something that I would be aware of, especially even if I had my son in the woods, for sure, you know, because he's always digging around in some sort of woods or something like that. So, just be vigilant, you know, do tick checks and stuff like that when you come back in. And if you're looking at trying to get the permethrin clothing, just, I'm sure there's Orvis or Cabela's or whoever's probably has all sorts of different options for you.
Yeah, Google will know.
Yeah, yeah. But
what else is going on?
Deer season will be coming up soon. Everybody should note that there are some errors in the hunting regulations booklet that was printed. So make sure you check our website as well. And look for those corrections, because some of them pertain to you and some may not. There just seemed to be an overwhelming amount of errors this year. I'm not sure exactly what happened when they printed the booklet, but just double check to make sure that if you know which area or what zone you're going to be hunting in for deer this year, that it is correct and you're on the up.
Do you have an example of an error?
I don't.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was, there's at least one page of errors that's all printed out. Oof. So, people are going to want to just double check and make sure, and we will do a better job in the future to make sure that, because there's always some printer errors, you know. I mean, it's a large booklet, and usually it's not that big a deal, but this year it seemed like there was a lot more than normal. So, and then, I mean, there's waterfowl. I think it's youth waterfowl hunting. This is this weekend.
There's a new program, wasn't there something?
I can't remember. I know they've done it a few years, and you know, like Hamden Slough sometimes has like a kids' day where they'll take kids out there. I'm not sure if that happened this year or not, but So kids, waterfowl opener is this weekend. And then it'll be the regular waterfowl opener, I think, the following weekend. So there's a lot of seasons that are opening up. Check our website if you want to get the lowdown on what's going on. Again, they say there's good numbers of ducks, and so people should have some success.
Good.
So, yeah, I mean, otherwise it's just the busyness of the DNR. There's our foresters are probably getting ready to do some logging contracts. Most of the logging that happens on our state forest lands happens in the winter. Last winter they had some issues. It wasn't really cold enough a lot of times for the loggers to get in without, you know, getting stuck or mucking up the ground. And so there were some contracts they weren't able to get to. So it might be a big season this year if we have the winter that we're supposed to. So they're
and
getting pretty busy.
Just to keep it clean or the manage
it's
or
all
is
yep
it income?
It's all a little bit of both. A lot of our forest lands are, some of them are school trust lands, and so we are obligated to basically make money off of those properties to put into the school trust fund, you know, for schools.
And what so schools? Oh, forest schools.
For a school, yeah, like public schools.
Oh, for the public schools?
Yep. And so they don't just go in and clear cut just because, you know, they're trying to cut at the right time to make sure the forest doesn't, it's sustainable, you know. So they have a lot of work that they have to do to make sure that they're picking the right stands that are ready for cutting.
Interesting. So the state of Minnesota has part of the public school system funding through our logging.
Well, yeah. Probably, I mean, there's, and a lot of it's just our loggers that are looking at those lands and deciding when is a good time to cut those.
No, but I mean, like the income, like
yep,
tax funding
that is
actually a resource. It's a natural resource. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually kind of brilliant. It makes sense.
Yep. So, and I mean, even Becker County has its own tax forfeit lands that they look to do logging efforts on too. So, you know, this winter, hopefully it'll be a good season for loggers and they can start getting out. And because I know last year they really did struggle. But yeah, I think that's, other than that, it's just kind of, usually we take a breather and we can take a step back and try to look. And we have a lot of meetings too that we try to get to that we can't get to during the summer months. One other thing that people would probably want to be aware of in Becker and Otter Tail counties is that the Otter Tail River is going through what we call a RAPS process. RAPS stands for Watershed Restoration and Protection Strategies. And basically it's a large planning process where they evaluate Otter Tail River, the lakes in the system, and also the Pelican River too, and see what condition is the river in. Are there any issues or impairments? And our IBI, remember we talked about Index of Biotic Integrity, it's kind of the same thing, you know?
Just for a river, for
floating. There's thresholds for water clarity, water quality, that type of stuff. And just to see if the river is meeting those expectations. And also, if it's not, then what are the factors that are contributing to those problems? And so hopefully by the end of this planning process, it happens about every 10 years is kind of the schedule for each river system. Is by the end of this process, we know what the problems are in the Otter Tail River system. What are some strategies we can use to address those problems?
And if then, there are any.
Yep. And then get money to help address those problems, you know? And so that's being led by East Otter Tail SWCD, I believe. And actually right here in Perham. And so, but it's also helping with the PCA is also basically subcontracting out with the SWCD to do that work. So people may see some sort of public notice or something like that in the future about the RAPS process.
That is good to know.
Yeah.
That's coming up.
It's a long process. So it'll be, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years, we'll be going through that.
Oh, wow. And so winter, when is the next, then we speak again in the spring? After
this is all, like the next
5 months or so?
Yeah, I mean, that would, yeah, otherwise it's kind of boring for us. It's mostly just the same old, you know, find a fish, stock it, and then start writing reports this winter. So,
do you do anything ice fishing style? Like, do you actually cut holes and check the...
No, we pretty much rely on ourselves, you know, like if I'm out ice fishing or, you know, just listening to other reports, but we don't have a crew that runs around just to see what the ice thickness is or anything like that.
Okay.
So it's kind of left up to the angler to make sure that they're using their best judgment before they head out.
Sure. Oh, okay. For safety. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, well, just wondering.
Yep.
Well, that was a very nice fall update. And you know, people can reach you in Becker County. They can What's the phone number again?
218-846-8290.
And you're open year round?
Yep. You know, our standard office hours are 8 to 4:30. So
and you're open to the public, obviously, with any kind of question.
Yeah, they can call, email too. Our website's www.dnr.state.mn.us, or just Google us and say Minnesota DNR, and you'll find our website.
And then there's a location for Becker County.
Yep. There's all sorts of information for whatever you need on the website. So
and the location, you will find the exact. Well, thank you very much for coming again. And I like that we have a dialogue and then we stay in touch. And then we'll hear you no later than next year.
Yep, great.
Thank you. Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.